I'm a little fearful of sharing what I have this morning, not really because of you, mostly because of my humanity and how I can sometimes see things wrong. So if I say anything too directly or too from my own perspective, I hope maybe I can do like Paul. He said, I would that you would bear with me in my foolishness one place. So maybe I'll probably need that more than him. But so maybe you could bear with me in my foolishness. And thinking about living life, though, Morris Yoder had been there for the one weekend at Bible school giving a, I don't know if you should call it talks or messages on stars. The sun as well, the universe, I guess we could call it. And as in what these people that study these things call, when a star dies, it becomes, at some point, it becomes a pulsing star, I think it was called, where this thing is spinning, and every time it spins, it gives out like a radio signal that goes beep, beep, or well, some. And he says it's in Job where it talks about the stars singing. That's, I guess, what he thinks that is. And some are so beep, beep, just fast. It was amazing. He had recordings of the radio signals they get off of these things. So I would like for you to compare your life to one of those pulsing stars. So I know it's easy, and I fail in this as much as anyone. I sort of like to think that I sort of live to myself, don't I? If I'm rushing around and I get impatient, who's that affecting? Just me, right? I'd like to think so, but if I'm honest, I know that's not quite true. And so our lives are a little bit like these pulsing stars giving off signals, right? And what? So the question to me is, what kind of signal is your life giving to the people around you? What kind of signal? And then I want to talk about giving in a broad sense. So if I tell you that my message is about giving, what kind of giving do you immediately think about? There's usually one kind or a type of giving that our minds just immediately go to. I'm sorry, what was that, Jason?
Money.
Money? What were you saying? And is that right? I mean, I realize that giving money is part of giving. I don't dispute that. But should giving, the first thing when I talk about giving, should you immediately be worried that I'm going to say how much of your check you should be giving away? Or maybe it's not worry, but wondering. So I'd like to ask three questions in this message and answer them at least briefly, the one a little bit more extensively. What do I give? How do I give? And why do I give? So hopefully I can do this without too much time. Before I start, it's going to be impossible to take in all the aspects of all these. It'd probably require a number of messages, maybe on each one. But what I'd like to do this morning is just to stir your thoughts, whether you agree or disagree with some of my conclusions, stir your thoughts and also share the scripture with you. So back to this thing of giving, why is money? I don't know that I have an answer. Why is money the first thing that comes to my mind about giving? Is it really the main or the most important thing that I should be giving? If I may compare money to the Old Testament, Old Covenant sacrifices, would I be allowed to say that giving money is necessary, but really only symbolic of where my heart is in the whole thing of giving? Would that be true? Giving does, so let's say I have $1 million, which I don't, but I'm not a Christian, but I want God to look good at me. Does giving a million, the whole lot away, will that make me a Christian? So giving money is actually only an indication of something deeper in my heart. Or of wanting attention, or of wanting you to think good about me, right? Possibly. So money itself, while not to be despised, is not really the true essence of giving. Let me read Psalm 40, verse 6 through 10. And you can just listen closely to these verses. Psalm 40, verse 6 to 10 says this, "Sacrifice and offerings thou didst not desire. Mine ears hast thou opened. Burnt offering and sin offerings hast thou not required. Then I said, lo, I come. In the volume of the book, or the Bible, it is written of me, I delight to do thy will, O my God. Yea, thy law is within my heart." Then he goes on, he says, "I have preached righteousness in the great congregation. Lo, I have not refrained my lips, O Lord, thou knowest. I have not hid thy righteousness within my heart. I have declared thy faithfulness and thy salvation. I have not concealed thy loving kindness and thy truth from the great congregation." So he's saying, this is in the Old Testament when they were required to offer sacrifice. He's saying that's not really what God wants. And so while I firmly believe that a Christian will share of his money, physical things, that's really not what God is after, is your stuff. He's after something deeper. 1 Samuel 15, verse 22. Samuel talking to Saul. Why don't you all turn to Ecclesiastes 11 a while? 1 Samuel 15, verse 22. And Samuel said, "Hath the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in having you," my words, "obey the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to hearken," or listen, "than the fat of rams." It makes me think of some of my favorite verses. I think it's Micah 6. Is it 6 through 8? "He has showed thee, O man, and what is good, and what doth the Lord require thee, but to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with thy God." Doesn't say anything about money or sacrifices. You know, what this comes down to is all I have and seemingly possess is really not mine, at least in a consistent and controllable way. You know, all I have to do is drive down the road and have one accident, hit the wrong person, and it's gone. Don't even matter how much insurance I carry, even though they think that helps. It's gone. It's not mine. It can be gone tomorrow. You know, while giving does involve, like I said, these physical things, it has to be something more than that. I came up with three things that I think that are more valuable than money, if I can say that that way. And while these are gifts as well, to some degree I have more control and more choice over them than I do over my money, even, I would say. So the first thing I think that God wants and that I should actually be giving to others is my time. My time, our time. I have to think of a church sign that I saw years ago. I think it was when I was driving to Kentucky to visit Debbie before we were married. It said, "Children spell love, T-I-M-E." And that's just sort of seared itself into my brain. Children spell love, T-I-M-E. And that's not poor spelling, school children. That's actually accurate spelling in this case. Children aren't the only ones. You know, I'm often afraid, I think I've done this, I think I've seen others do it, is that they throw money or things at people and problems that actually need time way more than they need money. I've seen it in mission efforts. I've seen it in parenting. I've seen it in church. I could keep going. Throwing money. And you know, somehow I think what happens is when I see a need and I can throw some money there, I can go earn some more money. If you go spend my $100 foolishly, yeah, it's no longer, I can't control that $100, but it really affects me very little, right? But if I'm to give you my time, and then you're going to go out and do foolish things, it's going to hurt more because I've become part of your life. I have to think of the little girl, I don't know, it's been a while since I used this one here, I think, but a little girl whose brother was, this little 4 or 5 year old girl was always asking her older brother to read books to her. And you know, children, they have these favorite books that you have to read and read and read again. So he got this bright idea. He got some for, I don't know, a recorder of some sort. And he read these stories and recorded them. And there he said, "Now, sister, every time you want to listen to this story, there it is. You can go listen to it." And it was about a day later, she came and said, "Hey, could you read this book to me?" And he's like, "Whoa. What happened? You could go listen to it on the recorder." She's like, "Well, that recorder, it don't have a lap." Was that the deal? No, it wasn't. She wanted his time, his attention, who he really was. And this takes me directly into the next step. If we invest our time in others, in giving, it's going to affect our heart. So the second thing I have that I feel is more important than money is to give our heart. Now, oftentimes that's used in relation of marriage and all that, and that's fine, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a heart that comes with ears that listen. I'm talking about a heart that has compassion and understanding, or at least seeks to understand others. I'm talking about a heart that is courageous enough that it's willing to speak directly and clearly, yet kindly, to the needs and potential problems of others. And when I think of giving a heart, I think of giving even when it's not appreciated. When I think of giving a heart, I think of someone who is continues pouring out themselves for others, even when they're pushed aside, spoken ill of, or unappreciated. And that's hard, isn't it? So I think that's more important. Then maybe the third one, I don't know that's necessarily any of these are more important than others, but third one I have is giving of our passion. Giving of our passion. You know, what gets you excited? What gets you moving in life? What gets you out of bed? Is it something that you can share with others? Is it something that you would like others to know? Is it something that you're excited about? And it sort of comes back to Wednesday evening. We had that discussion groups there on vision. And you know, really, I don't know that I shared this in the group. I don't know that we can ever expect all of our visions to mesh and to work together. But to see you inspired about something, even if it's something that I may never even consider doing, is still inspirational, right? To see my brothers, to see my sisters willing to invest, to give, to be on fire for God in whatever field or area that may be. It may be one that I can't ever enter, but it still blesses me, it still encourages me, it still helps me to be passionate for God. So share your passion. And if I can say this kindly, I don't want to come and be critical in any way. But if I can share somewhat of a concern for us as a church this morning at some of these points. You know, I'm deeply, I can honestly say, deeply appreciative, and I commend you all for your sharing of physical things, for your willingness to give, yeah, even of your time. Maybe it comes with some grumbling sometimes, but that's okay. Mine does too. But you're sharing for physical needs and opportunities. But my question for myself, first of all, and then for you as well, is do we stop there? Do we stop there? Do we have time not only to listen to others and their struggles, but do we take time to actually inquire with each other, how is it going in your life? Do we invite others to share their burdens? Do we seek to walk with them? Do we seek out and support the faltering and the weak? And I know there's some of that, and God bless you for that. Do we have hearts that care? Do we have a compassion to help, to become part of the solution? Do we have hearts that courageously speak and share the truth, of course in love, but that are willing to say what needs to be said, even if it makes you less popular? Are we willing to walk with and be part of the lives of others? Are we giving of ourselves? You know, are we willing to sacrifice when we seemingly have a good thing going and we feel secure and we know how this works and we know, and then here comes something that just would rock the boat, do we just say, no, we can't help there. We can't give there. You think if there's any alloy of self in that, that God can bless that? Are we willing to stretch and to grow ourselves so as to be able to free up others' time and attention so that they can maybe be used elsewhere where maybe they're more needed? And one last point on this part is, do we judge others' giving by our own ability to give and comfort level? Do we judge others' giving by our own giving and comfort level? You know, would you agree that God has given different abilities and resources to different people? Would you agree with that? Would that go with gifts? Don't some have a gift of teaching? Maybe some have a gift for listening. Maybe some have a gift of money, let's say it. Some definitely have more than others, right? And we could keep going. Does that mean that we should all equally give? So if when we put money into the offering, should every brother give the exact same amount? When people study to share, will they all do that the same way? Should they all do it equally the same? Or does God sometimes give one person an area to serve here and another person another area that they serve in? You know, should I be critical of the money or time you invest to help or bless others? if it's different from what I either do or am able to do. You know, what if, and occasionally I don't do much of this, so don't worry necessarily. I'm just going to use this as an illustration. But what if, when the deacons are both gone and I'm back there counting the offering, and then the next week I would come tell you, I said, I would see a check in the offering. Next week I would come tell you, I said, brother, I appreciate you giving to the church, but really, you're giving too much. You need to keep 10% of that back and take your boys fishing. Would you think that was wise of me? And I'm asking questions. I'm just wondering, what would you think about that? What if I would say, yeah, your wife just, I don't know. To my knowledge, you haven't taken her out to eat for a long time, so you better take her out to eat and take $25 out of that offering next Sunday. Isn't to some degree giving a rather intensely personal thing? To where, yes, I'm not suggesting if you're bankrupt, it might be time for your committee to tell you to, I think you should still give where you can, but to tell you that, yeah, you don't have to give $1,000 every Sunday. And so I'm going to come a little bit strange. I'm going to make this a little personal, but I have a couple questions, and I need your help with this. I don't mean it critically, but I have some things that have bothered me for a while. And maybe this is a stupid place to stick them in, but I'm going to put them in and then invite you to come help me. So, for example, we're at Bible school there, and I couldn't tell you how many people ask, especially my wife, so how old is your baby? Oh, she's a month old. Ooh, you're brave bringing a month-old baby to Bible school. When you hear that for the dozenth time, you start wondering, do they think we're stupid or something? I mean, seriously, it does make you wonder. So we just finally asked some, are we stupid? Well, no, that's not what we meant. We just wouldn't do that or couldn't do that or whatever. Well, and that's fine. They meant it well. Don't misunderstand that I'm being. But what was interesting is that what they don't know, is that I tried as hard as I ever have to just get my wife to stay at home, and I would have ducked out myself, except with some of the transitions taking place there, I felt like a loser to do it. So we thought I told my wife, why don't you stay home during the week, keep the girls in school. The first week there wasn't school. So that just makes 2 weeks, and then I'll either come down for the weekends or you can come up. And anyway, I finally felt like it was much better to accept her viewpoint that she wanted to be there with me. And I don't say that. I'm just saying you how it was. You know, another one that we run into a lot is when I have meetings somewhere, different of the people in that church will tell her, and again, this is fine. It's just something we're trying to work through. Oh, thank you so much for making the sacrifice of coming with him, with your husband. Well, trust me, I am extremely grateful that I have a wife that likes to go with me. The fact of the matter is, though, she sees it as much less of a sacrifice to go along than to stay at home. And so, how are we supposed to deal with this? Almost like you're, anyway, so special for doing this, yet we really feel like we're doing what's best or what's easiest for us. And I'll be generic here, but maybe one we've heard here to some extent is you should not have meetings, be involved in church work, help with certain situations because of your family. And while I want to accept and appreciate concerns, what I've struggled with in some of this is some of the question that it raises is if we choose to give, let me just hasten to say this first. I have strongly purposed in my heart to never be involved with anything where my wife isn't 100% in agreement with me, okay? I don't know whether you knew that or not. But I would just say, no, I can't do that if we're not together on it. Now, that said, it doesn't say that it's easy to hit a balance. I'm not trying to say that. But we try together to find the balance of what we feel God has for us in that. So when we hear this thing, and it comes across pretty strong, has a couple times, that it's for your wife or for your children. And we've sat, we've prayed, we've talked about this, and we're sincerely trying to do what we felt God has for us. I'll just be honest, it's a little hard to know what to do with that kind of concern if, and I would say, Ernie and Jason have done a good job in this. I'm not trying to say across the board. But for the most part, this is coming from people that have never taken the time as a couple just to sit down with us and ask my wife and I, how do you work through this stress? What stresses you out? How do you handle this? And so they're at random throwing out this thing. And then I'm supposed to fit it in here and appreciate it. I don't know. I honestly feel like I need some help here. So there you have it. Make sense? A further question is, I do believe that my wife, my daughters are very, need to be my first priority. Absolutely. And I've tried to live my life on that. And so a couple follow-up questions, not to be defensive, but that I would like to ask those of you that maybe have some questions is, do you know how much time I spend at home? Do you have any idea how often I get to eat breakfast with my daughters? In fact, I'll just tell you this. One of my cousins was bemoaning the fact that he can't be a farmer. And I said, well, just set your schedule like a farmer's. What's to keep you? He worked in a barn shop somewhere else. Well, he says, I just can't. I said, well, sure you can. I mean, if you got to be at work, go get to work early and then go home for breakfast. What's keeping you from doing it? I mean, he was part owner. Oh, well, my partner. Well, sit down and talk to your partner. I mean, it's doable. And he says, well, it's just not a garage door business. Well, I could sell more doors if I would operate a little differently. I'm pretty sure I could. But where's my focus? You know, how often can I stay home with the small girls while my wife drives the school children or I drive the school children? Do you have any idea? Maybe some of you catch a glimpse. I don't know. Yeah, how often is one or another of my daughters with me in the office or riding with me in the truck? How often does my wife and the two that aren't in school, how often can I take them with me through my day? Then the last question I have is, would you like if I judged your ability to give based on that you don't do things exactly the way I do? And I'll let it for there. And now you can come set me straight sometime personally, okay? I invite you to do that. But I think we do need to be careful that we don't judge giving by, like I said, by what works for me may be different for somebody else. So, okay, let's go to Ecclesiastes and get on to this next point. Ecclesiastes chapter 11. Verse 1 through 6. Ecclesiastes 11, verse 1 through 6. Cast thy bread upon the waters, for thou shalt find it after many days. Give a portion to 7 and also to 8, for thou knowest not what evil shall be upon the earth. If the clouds be full of rain, they empty themselves upon the earth. And if the tree fall toward the south or toward the north, in the place where the tree falleth, there it shall be. He that observeth the wind shall not sow. He that regardeth the clouds shall not reap. As thou knowest not what is in the way of the spirit, nor how the bones do grow in the womb of her that is with child, even so thou knowest not the works of God who maketh all. In the morning sow thy seed, and in the evening withhold not thine hand, for thou knowest not whether thou shalt prosper, either this or that, or whether they both shall be alike good. So I'd like to consider these verses and come up with, not just in these, I have some others, but I'd like to look at 7 rules of how do I give. 7 rules of how do I give. The first verse, cast thy bread upon the waters, for thou shalt find it after many days. You know, what sense does it make, this phrase, cast your bread upon the waters? When I think of casting something, one of the favorite stories of casting stuff is there were these bank robbers in Los Angeles, and they were being chased by the police, and they had stolen this wad of cash. And as they drove down the road, the back window of that SUV opened, and they started casting money out, just throwing it out, left and right. And the people, just hundreds of people, came running to grab this cash. That's what I think of casting. If you would see me beside a river casting my food out into the water, what would you think of me? Yeah. It's got to screw loose somewhere, right? What is the good benefit or profit in casting bread, which means food, into the water? You know, if you'd see me casting food into the water, of course, I'm taking this in a literal sense at the moment, and you came and asked me, what are you doing? I said, well, I really don't have it to spare, but honestly, I read that it's going to come back to me. You decide I either am feeding the fish or something, right? It'd be the only sense you could make out of that. So the first rule I want to look at is give or share what you have. Give or share what you have. Bread, as I look at that word, the translated word in Hebrew, just basically means any food. It could mean very expensive food. It could mean a crust of bread. You know, cast means exactly what it sounds like, to send forth away, to let it depart, to leave, to throw, and or to shoot it forth. So if I may put this verse into my own words, if I may interpret it, is I am to take what I have a limited amount of and could possibly use for myself. I'm to take that and use it and share it with others who are going through my life. Furthermore, in that rest of that verse, many times this sharing will appear as useless and as beneficial as a person throwing their food out onto a river or lake. Many times we want results, don't we? And I'm the same way. If I pay somebody for a, you think I write a $1,000 check and don't get something back? You're messed up. Now, sometimes somebody can take a door and I can't do much about it. But if I'm writing a check, I want something for that check, right? Are you different? If I give somebody $100, I don't want just any something. I want a specific something and it's supposed to be really good. But you know, this thing of casting our bread upon the waters, of sharing what God has given us, that which we could use for ourselves, but we choose to cast it, to give it. The reason for doing this is not the benefit necessarily that we get. Sure, the verse does say it will return to you after many days. But who's to know whether those many days is in this life or the next? I don't know. But we're commanded to do it. Get it done. Share what you have. And let's look at that thing. I want to be careful here in thinking we are given a promise that will return. But I'd like to suggest to you that if you are keeping track of what you're casting out the window and expecting it to come back, you're not really giving. Is that fair? You know, I guess back to those robbers, when they were casting the money out the window, I thought pretty sure they had no clue what was going. They were just, I don't know, somehow they thought it would improve life down the road probably once they were caught. When you're casting, you're not really keeping track. You're just getting rid of it, giving. So this isn't a certificate of deposit that has a date on it that you can withdraw it with this amount of interest at a certain day. It's somewhere in the future. God only knows when. So rule number one was give what you have. Okay, rule number two, give generously. Let's look at verse 2. Ecclesiastes 11, verse 2, give a portion to 7 and also to 8, for thou knowest not what evil shall be upon the earth. So there's two interesting words in the first part of this verse. The first is there, 2:7, and then also the 2:8. So the first in Hebrew, the best I can pronounce it, is Sheba, is 7, and then 8 is Shamone. So Sheba is, Hebrew is a little bit like Spanish. In English, we'd have a difficult time telling whether 7 is masculine or feminine, right? We don't talk that way. But in Spanish, some other languages, your words are more masculine or feminine. What's interesting is 7 in Hebrew is a masculine number, and it means full to capacity. So till the need is filled, basically, is what it's saying. And I don't know, is this the way, maybe the reason 7 is masculine is that's the way we as fellows would tend to give if we give, right? We give till we feel it's okay. Now, they have enough, now we can stop. What's interesting is look at this verse again. It says, give a portion to 7 and then also to 8. Now, interestingly enough, one thing where you can see this, actually the masculine and the feminine, is the word 7 there, and Sheba, ends in A-H. And if you look like Isaiah, Jeremiah, all those end in A-H. So that's the masculine Hebrew ending. So then to 8, Shemoni ends in E-H, which is generally a feminine. And that word, if we were to put it into English more than just the number 8, would actually mean to give till there's plumpness and surplus. So I don't know, do you ladies have a gift in giving more than we as men do? I don't know. But I just thought that was interesting. I was looking at that like, this is totally interesting. So seven, in this usage, masculine with the thought of being filled to full. Eight is a feminine gender and gives the idea of plumpness and surplus. So I want to ask you this. Do any of us know what will happen to us tomorrow? We have to clarify that, right? Most of us think we know. We got some plans, we got some ideas, and we think. But the final fact is none of us knows whether we're even going to make it home to our house. There's been people, and I know of some situations, where people either going to church or home from church never made it. And I'm not suggesting you won't. I'm just saying we don't absolutely know. So if I don't do what I know I should do today, so far as giving and sharing, you know, I have no way of being certain whether or not I will have the resources or even the ability to do it tomorrow. It may be gone. So if I may reword verse 2, let's do it this way. In your casting or giving, give till the needs are not only filled, but give until there is more than what is needed, required, or expected. Because there is no promise or assurance that you will have the same opportunity or capabilities that you have today. Okay, going on to verse 3 and rule 3. If you don't give now, you won't get it done tomorrow. Sort of building on this, you won't get it done in some future time. I had a friend, and he had started a mechanic shop, and it wasn't Jonas, just to be clear. He started this mechanic shop, and he told me, he said, you know, right now things are tight. But he said, I'm going to build up this business, and in 10 years or so, I can give so much to the mission work and so much to help. You think he would? I don't know whether he was given any at that point or not, but it didn't sound like it was much. I'm not going to say this is going to happen to everybody that doesn't give, but I'll tell you, in this situation, he's left the church, is living out in the world, and I'm sure he's not giving anymore. And I'm not saying that not giving was the sum total of the reasons he ended up where he is, but I do have to wonder whether it might have been part of it. Let's read verse 3. If the clouds be full of rain, they empty themselves upon the earth. If the tree fall toward the south or toward the north, in the place where the tree falleth, there it shall be. So this verse is building on the last part of verse 2. We don't know what's going to happen. And generally speaking, the way things are with you right now, the thoughts, attitudes, opinions, and ideas you have will result in the end buildup. Just as surely as clouds that are full of rain drop that rain, so a person will tend to continue the way they were. Of course, there's repentance and change. But in a general sense, just as surely as a tree, if you had a tree fall over in your yard or out in the woods behind your house, you know, if you saw that tree laying there one day and it was over this way and you came back the next day it was over that way, you would start questioning your sanity, wouldn't you? And just the same way, a man that claims he's going to do something at some future date but is making no efforts to do that now should question his sanity just as much. A person will not suddenly become sharing or aware of needs and opportunities tomorrow if they're missing those of today. Okay, moving on to rule number 4, verse 4. He that observeth the wind shall not sow. He that regardeth the clouds shall not reap. You know, friends, there is never a perfect time or a perfect way to help or give to others. Did you know that? There's always something wrong. You know, the farmer who waits until the wind is perfect to spread his fertilizer or seed, you know, when they broadcast and it spins, and he's like, the wind's blowing, so when I drive this way, it's going to make it heavier here, so I'm just not going to do it. The wind will never be perfect when he has time. Finally, he just has to do it. You know, also the farmer that looks at the clouds before he cuts hay, at least if you live in a part of the world where there are clouds, will never get his hay cut, because you could probably sooner or later find a cloud, or if you don't find one, you're going to sit there waiting to find one, right? So, end result, your hay never gets cut. Just so that man that waits to help or give and bless others till it is convenient or until others are deserving will never get around to doing it. Okay, rule number 5. Giving doesn't make sense to the natural man. Verse 5. As thou knowest, not what is the way of the Spirit, nor how the bones do grow in the womb of her that is with child, even so thou knowest not the works of God who maketh all. So in a scientific way, man can probably today better than ever explain how life happens and how it works to some degree, but they still can't make life or tell you exactly at the moment life starts, can they? How does that spirit come? Can you say exactly how somebody dies? I mean, we know if you get hurt, you get cancer, but what's the difference between an hour before death and an hour after death? A radical difference. But at what place did that spirit really leave? I mean, sometimes we can pinpoint, other times, what makes that? You know, how can the things that unite to form a baby, soft cells and fluids, grow into bones? What sense does that make? No hardness there, yet grows a skeleton. And we can say, oh, it's in the DNA. Well, sure it is. But again, it's not really something man can do. You know, how does God work in the heart? How does God use my feeble, your feeble efforts and the things I can either do or give or listen to build his kingdom? Can you explain it? I don't know. I can't. You know, how does he use those faulty efforts of man to further his purposes? How can he use the nothingness, really, of my endeavors and the worthlessness of my belongings to bless others? Yet he can and he does. So giving doesn't really make sense to a natural man. Not unless he's getting glory anyway. Let's read the next two verses. I don't really have rules they sort of build, so we'll just keep on going. Verse 6. In the morning sow thy seed, and in the evening withhold not thine hand, for thou knowest not whether it shall prosper, either this or that, whether they both shall be alike good. You know, do and give. As you start your day and you see needs, you see opportunities, take them. In the morning, when you had those high hopes of accomplishing all these things today, and you had all your plans made and lined up, and they seemed like they were going to click, and then here comes a need. Can you sacrifice your plans? Can you give? You know, in the evening, as you see the hours of the day winding down and you just know you won't be able to finish this, do you still have time to invest in others? Because he's telling us here, you have no idea which of those needs God can most use. And so my responsibility comes to fill all the ones I can. Then rule 6, and I read this out of Proverbs 3, 27, 28. You can listen or turn if you want to, but I'll just read it. Proverbs chapter 3, verse 27, 28 says, withhold not good from them to whom it is due, when it is in the power of thine hand to do it. Say not unto thy neighbor, go and come again, and tomorrow I will give when thou hast it by you. So the sixth rule of giving is don't make excuses. Don't make excuses. If I have the ability, if I see the need, and if I have what can be used at least partially to fill that need, don't say later, tomorrow. You know, what excuse will be adequate before God if when I see a need and I have what is needed, I keep it to myself? Can I be accepted before God? May I in honesty lift up my head among men if I live life tomorrow? Rule number 7, give as you have been given to. Read Matthew chapter 10, verse 7 and 8. Jesus talking to disciples, and as ye go, preach, saying, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Heal the sick, cleanse the lepers, raise the dead, cast out devils. Freely ye have received, freely give. You know, how has God given to me, to you? Has he kept anything back? Has he reserved something that he's not willing to give for us? Has he neglected anything that I really need? Has he asked me to prove myself or to measure up to a certain standard before he gives me his best? Romans 5 verse 8 says this, but God commended his love toward us, and that while you were yet sinners, Christ died for us. Was there any reason for him to give in that way? Okay, now the second scripture I'd like to turn to and then close is 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 6. 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 6. Let's look at these words of Paul to the Corinthian church. He says about as direct as I think you can find it anywhere. 2 Corinthians 9, verse 6. But this I say, he which soweth or giveth sparingly shall reap or get also sparingly. Do you want heaven sparingly? And he which soweth bountifully shall reap also bountifully. Verse 7. Every man according as he has purposed or finds himself able in his heart, so let him give, not grudgingly or complainingly, or even of feeling like he needs to of necessity. For God loveth a cheerful, willing giver. Adding some of my own words to help clarify the translation. Verse 8. And God is able to make all grace abound toward you, that ye, always having all sufficiency in all things, may abound to every good work. I think he's saying you can't outgive God. As it is written, he hath dispersed abroad, he hath given to the poor, his righteousness remaineth forever. Now he that ministereth seed to the sower both minister bread for your food and multiply your seed sown and increase the fruits of your righteousness. See what God can do? As we give what we have, that bread, that little bit of nothing, he can not only feed us, but he can actually multiply it into a seed that's sown to help others and fruits of righteousness. Verse 11, being enriched in everything to all bountifulness, which causeth through us thanksgiving to God. So moving on to the last is, why do I give? Why do I give? May I read 1 John 3, verse 17 says this. Sort of came to me at the last bit here. But whoso hath this world's good, and again, has what's necessary for someone else, be that time, compassion, or money, and seeth his brother have need, and shutteth up his bowels of compassion, in other words, he doesn't help, and from him, how dwelleth the love of God in him? Do you know the answer to that question? How does God's love dwell in a heart that isn't giving it, filling the needs that it could? Can you answer that question? Let me ask you another question. What will happen to someone who is given a great gift, and after receiving that great gift, they go their same old way, having and showing no lasting appreciation? Can you receive a gift and remain unchanged? May I ask that question? Can you receive a gift and remain unchanged? I would say you cannot. If I receive a gift and I don't become a changed person through receiving that gift, whatever level it is, I become a worse person. And you know, so for those of us who understand that God sent his son to die for our sins and has offered us salvation, and we say we've accepted that, if we're not on fire for God and living wholly for him in whatever area we can fill a need for someone else, I would like to suggest to you, you're not what you think you are. You know, enough said. So what is the result of my life? What signals am I sending out? As I, as a Christian, earlier this week, I had the opportunity to ride through Miami, Florida with a long-haired Cuban fellow that probably, I don't know, but likely never in his life saw. Hopefully he saw a Christian, but I'm sure he never saw a Mennonite before. What signals did my life give to him? When my life pulses and it sends out those beeps like those stars, is it something that points to God? Is it just something that points to the business I was doing? You know, as you live your life, as I live my life, let's give all we can with only one thought. I wish I had more to give for the one who has given his all for me. Let's kneel for prayer.